This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking. Professor Irina Filatova had some very good advice for South Africa yesterday. She said you should be focusing on your own economy, which is struggling. Keep your mouth shut when it comes to international affairs and try and get things right here because there's a lot of work to do. Well, did we listen? Yesterday, Foreign Policy magazine in Washington published a Cyril Ramaphosa bylined article attacking Israel, Donald Trump, and the United States. In it, Ramaphosa and his co-authors called for the arrest of the Israeli president. They said, in essence, it's a doubling down by the ANC in its fight with the Trump administration. I asked Dr. Franz Cronier, who is one of our top political scientists, for context on the vehicle. In other words, how important is this foreign policy magazine?
Well, very relevant. It's a prominent international publication. And the message you place in it, regardless of who you are, is one that will be picked up within, you know, a matter of hours by serious foreign policy people around the world.
And the message that was sent by Cyril Ramaphosa and his co-authors, the Prime Minister of Malaysia and the President of Colombia and some activists from India, was sending, sticking a bit of a stick in the eye of the Trump administration and particularly Israel. How did you interpret what they wrote?
I thought it was a very aggressive attack that essentially said to hell with the United States and with the Trump administration and with Israel and with the Israeli leadership. I don't think they could have put it any firmer than that in the way in which they conveyed the message. Sanctions took a great leap forward yesterday after this foreign affairs piece. And not sure what that's going to be, but if this continues, the sanctions may look like this. There may be actions against specific South African individuals or institutions that are seen to threaten the interests of the United States or act in a corrupt fashion or threaten human rights around the world. Those may be preceded by some actions on a GOA, but remember, GOA is a very small proportion of South African exports. If you export under a GOA, of course, that's of little comfort to you. And the country's auto industry may be brought down by this. But that's a step. Then you get to more targeted sanctions. And beyond that, the one that I think South African institutions, banks and the like need to watch most carefully, the greatest risk for them is sanctions on the holding of South African government debt. If that step is later taken, then the consequences inside the South African economy and for really anyone that does business here, but financial institutions in particular, will be very, very serious.
Franz, we know that everybody gets emotional about certain things, and particularly in this case, we know the ANC and Cyril Ramaphosa are very unhappy about, in their perception, the way that the Palestinians, or particularly in Gaza, are being treated. But surely there's a risk-reward situation here. There are many things that we as private citizens feel upset about, but we don't go and scream and shout in the streets about them because there is a consequence to it. Surely there's some kind of a brains trust within the union buildings who would say, but hang on, the consequences of these current actions are going to really hurt the country.
Well, look, the brains trust in the union buildings has taken the ANC to 40% in the last election, which was a completely unnecessary result for them. I discussed at dinner this evening, with some people who were historically very close to the ANC about just why that was even allowed to happen. It was completely unnecessary. had some investment and some growth flowed into the South African economy sufficient to create 100, 200,000 net new jobs per year. Your question on the Brands Trust, the answer is it's the same Brands Trust that crashed the ANC into the ground in a fast detonation of, and completely unnecessarily, and now has taken it to 200 days into the GNU to just over 30% of the vote. And it's, I don't know. I don't understand it, Alec. Makes no sense.
Well, on the same theme, earlier this morning, our time, and late evening, around half past nine American or Californian time, I did manage to get hold of the man who has been tipped to become the next U.S. ambassador to South Africa. His name is Joel Pollack. He knows the country really well. He's married to the daughter of the iconic activist Rhoda Kodaly. And Joel had some pretty strong points to make after reading that foreign policy article. In fact, he wrote a piece himself. He's a senior editor at Breitbart, strongly criticizing South Africa's latest attack on the United States. It just feels a little bit like you mustn't poke the bear too many times because it might just turn around and give you a swat. Well, here's Joel Pollack's response.
You know, this is a losing strategy, and it then raises questions about who's actually driving this policy. Is this being driven by Iran, Iranian money? Is it being driven by China, China's attempt to regain influence in the Middle East? China has largely been cut out of the Middle East. At the recent Riyadh summit, the Chinese were basically absent. Now, under Joe Biden, the Chinese did play a larger role. They did negotiate a kind of restoration of relations between Iran and Saudi Arabia, and that agreement happened in Beijing. So China definitely wants a larger role. But they have been elbowed out again. And one wonders if the South African government is playing into China's influence by doing this. But again, if so, they're playing a dangerous game and they're allowing South Africa to be a pawn in China's effort to exert hegemony over the world rather than acting as a truly non-aligned nation. And again, the signal is that there's no mention of Hamas or terrorism. I don't know how any democratic government, any free government, can take the position that Hamas's terrorism doesn't matter, or more explicitly in South Africa's arguments at the ICJ, that certain forms of terrorism are entirely justified, that it's acceptable to kill innocent people as long as you're doing it for the right reason. So I think South Africa is taking some very dangerous steps here, and I don't know if the South African public has been told why. Again, there's an instructive lesson here, I think, for South Africa, which is that Zelensky and the Ukrainian government opposed Trump first as a candidate, now in some sense have criticized him as president. It doesn't go well when you do that. You have to work with the guy. And you can't hope to use the mainstream media or China as leverage against Trump. It doesn't work. What Trump wants is for people to negotiate in good faith. And that, I think, is what Zelensky is starting to do. And I think it's what South Africa needs to learn to do, or at least the South African government. But it's not doing it yet.
So negotiating in good faith will require a change in the position. Would that position be changed by targeted sanctions? And here, I guess one needs to also realize that the group, the family, as it were, that runs South Africa, and here you're talking about Ramaphosa, his brother-in-law, Patrice Motsepe, etc., are amongst the richest people in the country. They are billionaires in, many times over. Would those sanctions extend to their personal wealth or their personal financial positions? And I guess I'm trying to just get a sense of what the stick could be.
Yeah, I would think so. And I think also the reason to do something like that, if I were advising the president, would be to win the South African public over to your side. You know, you've seen the effect of Doge, Elon Musk's effort in exposing some of the government waste. And that's got broad support in the American public, even if journalists have been critical of the way it's been done, and there's a debate in the media about it. People generally are fascinated by what he's discovering. And I think that if you impose sanctions in a way that also exposes the overseas assets of people who have been misgoverning South Africa, I think the South African public would actually enjoy that and appreciate it, because South Africa is being robbed essentially by some of the people running it, not all. And I think people would like to know where that money is going and how it's being spent. And I think Donald Trump would actually make an alliance with the South African people, in a sense, to force change in the government.
Exposes the assets? How does that work?
Well, the way the United States Treasury works when it imposes sanctions, it's not just on assets that are physically or electronically in the control of the United States government or within U.S. borders. The U.S. Treasury has significant influence over international transactions. And that's how they imposed financial sanctions on Iran before those were unwound under the Obama administration in the run-up to the nuclear deal, which was not a really good deal. But anyway, that's how the sanctions worked. And that's how the sanctions have worked against Russia, Russian oligarchs, and so forth, Russia's exclusion from the SWIFT system. And, you know, Russia had alternatives. It went to China. But the assets of people close to the Russian government were then identified and in some cases seized. So I think those mechanisms still exist and can be deployed if put into motion.
And you'd be in favor of that?
I do think so, actually. I would, personally. But I'm not advising the president in that regard. I would be in favor of it. I think Ramaphosa is putting South Africa in a dangerous position. He's taking positions that are contrary to the interests of the United States. I believe they're also contrary to the interests of South Africa. They're certainly contrary to the interests of the Middle East. He is insisting on isolating Israel and sanctioning Israel and punishing and arresting Israeli leaders after Israel has defended its people from a horrific terror attack. You know, Ramaphosa's article came out just hours before Israel buried the Bibas family, the mother and two children, who were taken hostage in front of the whole world and then murdered. And when their remains were handed over, Hamas didn't even hand over the right corpse of the mother. They had a grotesque ceremony where they desecrated the bodies, essentially. They hung a sign on the mother's coffin that said she was arrested on the 7th of October as if she were some kind of criminal instead of an innocent civilian woman dragged from her home with her babies clinging to her. And that's the day on which Ramaphosa decided to launch this attack in the Foreign Policy Journal, stating that South Africa intended to pursue Israel. So I think that as long as South Africa is on the wrong side of that issue, which to me is a moral issue, I'm in favor of punitive actions that push South Africa away from that position. And I'm not the only person who feels that way.
Still with Trump, in a way, and his sidekick, South African-born and bred and raised, Elon Musk, the attack on government spending in the United States has actually got a lot of relevance here in South Africa. Those who haven't been following it closely enough, we had our national budget cancelled because Ramaphosa and Finance Minister Enoch Godongwana were proposing a 2 percentage point increase in VAT. So we would be paying 17% in future, not 15. And primarily this was to fund another increase in public sector pay. In other words, wages that are paid to those who work for the state. There's been a lot of kickback on this from other members of the Government of National Unity. And in the United States, they're doing something to address their issue. Yesterday, Trump had his first cabinet meeting and he gave the floor to Elon Musk. This is a video that was posted by Musk on his X account, and it shows the important part of his opening talk to the cabinet of the United States.
We're cutting, and it's an honor to have you. He's been a tremendously successful guy. He's really working so hard, and he's got businesses to run. And in many ways, they say, how do you do this? And, you know, it's he's sacrificing a lot and getting a lot of praise, I'll tell you. But he's also getting hit, and we would expect that. And that's the way it works. So I'd like to have Elon Musk please say a few words.
Well, thank you, Elon. Thank you, Mr. President. I actually just call myself a humble tech support here because this is actually, as crazy as it sounds, that is almost a literal description of the work that the DOGE team is doing, is helping fix the government computer systems. Many of these systems are extremely old. They don't communicate. There are a lot of mistakes in the systems. The software doesn't work. So we are actually tech support. It's ironic, but it's true. The overall goal here with the Doge team is to help address the enormous deficit. We simply cannot sustain as a country $2 trillion deficits. The interest rates, just the interest on the national debt, now exceeds the Defense Department spending. We spend a lot on the Defense Department, but we're spending like over $1 trillion on interest. If this continues, the country will become de facto bankrupt. It's not an optional thing, it is an essential thing. That's the reason I'm here. And taking a lot of flack, and getting a lot of death threats, by the way. I mean, I like to stack them up, you know. But if we don't do this, America will go bankrupt. That's why it has to be done. And I'm confident at this point, knock on wood, you know, knock on my wooden head, it's got a lot of wood up there, that we can actually find $1 trillion in savings. That would be roughly 15% of the $7 trillion budget. And obviously that can only be done with the support of everyone in this room. And I'd like to thank everyone for your support. Thank you very much. This can only be done with your support. So this is, it's really, DOGE is a support function for the president and for the agencies and departments to help achieve those savings and to effectively find 15% in reduction in fraud and waste. And we bring the receipts. So people say, like, well, is this real? Just go to doge.gov. We line item by line item, we specify each item. So, we will make mistakes. We won't be perfect. But when we make mistake, we'll fix it very quickly. So for example, with USAID, one of the things we accidentally canceled very briefly was Ebola, Ebola prevention. I think we all want Ebola prevention. So we restored the Ebola prevention immediately. And there was no interruption. But we do need to move quickly if we're to achieve a $1 trillion deficit reduction in financial year 2026. It requires saving $4 billion per day, every day, from now through the end of September. But we can do it, and we will do it. Thank you.
In the world of business banking, the bottom line can often triumph over relationships. At Investec, we value both. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking. Out of the ordinary.
At Sun Exchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
We've got a fabulous lineup for the 7th BizNews conference that'll be held in Hermanus from the 11th to the 13th of March, just around the corner. Amongst them is Andre Pienaar. He's the co-founder of the Scorpions, and after they were disbanded, off he went to the international scene and is the chief executive of a very successful global investment firm called C5 Capital. He spoke to Linda van Tilburg today and gave some well-considered advice to a South African government which many believe needs some.
In South Africa, over the last 24 months, we've had more civilian casualties than the total civilian casualties in Gaza at the hands of organized crime and drug syndicates. In 2023, 30,000 South Africans were murdered by criminals. And in 2024, 35,000. So more than 65,000 ordinary South Africans have been brutally and violently murdered by criminal syndicates and gangs over the course of the last 24 months, far exceeding the civilian casualties that have been suffered during the war in Gaza. This means that on an average day in South Africa, about 100 ordinary innocent South Africans get murdered by criminals. And at least a third of these victims are women and children. President Ramaphosa has now been in power for 4 terms, 2 terms as a deputy president, 1 term as a president. In total, during the course of his 4 terms in office, he has led a government that has seen more than 500,000 ordinary South Africans being murdered by criminal groups and by syndicates. And the question is, why does President Ramaphosa not focus on this near and present danger to his own people instead of going to file charges against Israel in his hour of crisis and need in the International Court of Justice? Last year, more than 17,000, to be precise, 17,676 South Africans were kidnapped and taken as hostages. So a multiple of the 250 Israeli citizens that were kidnapped by Hamas. The prosecution rate for that, for those kidnappings, is zero. Today, most of those South Africans are still being held hostage by criminal groups across our country. There's no public debate about this. The government has made no statement about this. President Ramaphosa has allowed drug cartels to make kidnap for ransom in South Africa a multi-billion dollar business on his watch. He's done nothing about it. The question is, why would we go and spend South African taxpayer monies to pursue a long-standing trade and investment partner, an ally like Israel, in the International Court of Justice, if ordinary South Africans have to suffer this tragedy, this terrible, terrible tragedy, daily at home? The prosecution rate for murder cases in South Africa is less than 1 out of 10. Why doesn't President Ramaphosa spend the government's money to address this near and present danger? Is it negligence? Is it cowardice? Or is it complicity with these criminal groups? Ordinary South Africans need to know. Ordinary South Africans demand to know. If we were to take the souls of all the murdered South Africans and convene them in the FNB stadium, there would not be enough space for all of them. If we were to convene the loved ones of those who've been murdered during President Ramaphosa's watch and government, there would be more than 10 million people gathered outside the FNB stadium for this terrible wake. It is the souls of the murdered and their loved ones who are crying out for justice and demanding justice. And justice should first start at home.
Well, a 10-year project by the United States to increase electricity supply on the African continent, they were talking about something like 30 gigawatts, which is about, well, almost the same amount that Eskom puts out every year, has now been terminated by U.S. President Donald Trump. Reason? The U.S. Energy Department said, quote, "Programs that serve our nation's interests will continue. However, programs that aren't aligned with our national interests, i.e. America's, will not." Most of the programs, from the feedback that has come through so far, will be terminated. Here's Bloomberg.
Now, the Trump administration has dismantled Power Africa, a U.S. initiative to increase electricity supply in Africa after more than a decade of work. Almost all of Power Africa's programs have been listed for termination and the majority of its staff fired. For more on this, let's bring in Bloomberg's Matthew Hill, who is in Cape Town with us. So, Matthew, talk to us a bit about Power Africa and what is behind this move and the timing of it.
Thanks very much, Jen. Power Africa was initiated more than a decade ago under the Obama administration and basically targeted to help create an additional 30 gigawatts of electrical energy in Africa, which is the place in the world which has the greatest lack of electricity. We're talking about 600 million people who don't have access. So it was really set up to tackle one of the biggest problems in the world. And now we're seeing it being dismantled.
Well, and Matt, it's still a problem, right? Of course, as you and the team constantly report out. What is the impact that we're looking at, especially if you think about a lot of the rescinding of aid that we're seeing from not just the U.S., but a number of other countries?
Exactly. So already the majority of the big projects, we're told, under Power Africa have been listed for termination. Staff have already been laid off and received their notices. But yeah, that's a very important point. We've also seen, for example, the UK announcing this week that they cutting back aid in favor of boosting defense spending. So there are some serious worries on the ground here in Africa about how the continent is going to get these 600 million people access to electricity, which is critical for development. It's critical for creating jobs and developing economies.
AI flag bearer and top performing stock in the BizNews global portfolio, NVIDIA, released its quarterly results last night. Here's the assessment from an expert spoken to by our partners at Bloomberg.
What does NVIDIA's results really tell us about the AI trade at the moment?
Scarlett, I think it tells us that the trade is still intact. And there is certainly some doubt, I think, over the past week. I mean, it's been a rough week to be a growth investor, to say the least. But I think these results, even though NVIDIA is sort of vacillating between up and down a little bit here in the aftermarkets, I think it tells us that the spending is intact. There were no bombshells, at least in the release, that indicated that there was any sort of slowing or indication even of slowing from the hyperscalers. And I think that was probably the biggest thing investors wanted to know. Now we'll get to the call, and obviously we'll get some questions directly to Jensen and his team about that very issue. But I think they'll probably say the same thing, which is that the spending and the demand is still happening as we expect.
And how are you interpreting the outlook that NVIDIA is offering? First quarter revenue, $43 billion plus or minus 2%. Analysts were looking for about $42.3 billion. What's the calculus here that Jensen Huang is, you know, going through as he kind of frames what his outlook is to a very nervous investor base?
Yeah. Nervous is the right word. I think that the $42 billion, that guidance, it was actually slightly better than I would have thought would have been kind of the hurdle for investors. I think something even in line-ish would have been okay here. And we got about a 2% guide up. It was actually a bigger guide up than we had last quarter. And so I think the bottom line is we have Blackwell demand, which they mentioned, kind of surging. That's becoming a bigger and bigger part of the products they're delivering. They mentioned specifically Microsoft, Google, Amazon, other customers, but I think Microsoft is key, as customers of Blackwell. They're shipping to them. And so I think the story around that guidance is, look, this is what we've tended to do. We've been able to guide up a little bit relative to street expectations. This was a little bit of a better guy than last quarter. And so back to what we said before, I think the trade is still intact.
And to close off with, the legendary football manager Arsene Wenger hasn't given up hope that his beloved Arsenal will win the biggest prize in soccer, the English Premier League.
Talking of talent, does Arsenal need to buy some?
Well,
particularly up front.
You know, I believe that Arsenal has plenty of talent, has worked very well, and has the potential to win the Premier League. What is the ultimate target?
This year?
This year, there's still a small chance, but right, not a big one now. Because
less than 20%.
The last weekend was detrimental to his chances.
Yes.
But you never know. You never know. When you're in this situation, I've said over the weekend, 20% chance is still to win the title. But when you're in this situation, you don't count. You go for it, and you now, what the only thing you can say, it doesn't depend only on us. It depends as well on us performing at the top level and on Liverpool having a blip of two or three games.
Do you think there's any names they should be looking at in terms of players they should put in up front?
I don't want to interfere with the... I believe I was there long enough. I did my job as well as I could. And now I want other people to do their job freely without having me every time saying, no, that is right or not right. Let people work.
Thanks for being with us tonight and through this week. We'll be back again on Monday. Until then, cheerio. This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to private banking service now for your business.